You're listening to the Food Freedom Life Podcast. My name is Brittany Allison, and I spent 6+ years stuck in diet binge cycles, hating my body and envying others who seem to have it all because I never felt enough. What I discovered in my journey to food freedom and becoming a registered dietitian is this: you can either live your life at war with your mind or learn to work in sync with it. So if you're ready to learn how to be in tune with yourself and evolve your life, welcome to the show. Today on the show, we have Sam Abbott, who is a registered dietitian nutritionist who helps those with PCOS ditch diets and improve hormone imbalances without feeling guilty or stressed about food. She's passionate about empowering people with PCOS to find peace and balance with nutrition, hormones, body, and life. Sam is the owner of PCOS Nutrition Co., and her Nourished with PCOS program is centered around improving hormone balance without a side of diet culture or weight stigma. Welcome, Sam. So happy to have you on the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Brittany. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, I've never had anybody on the show talk about PCOS before.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know. You're the first. So, but it's something that I've had multiple clients who have struggled with PCOS. And so I think having an expert speak to it is going to be really valuable for everybody listening, whether they're diagnosed with it, whether they may be don't know about what it is, or they're kind of thinking that that's something that's going on with them. It's going to be really helpful. So I'm super excited.
Awesome. I'm excited to dive in.
Yeah. So why don't we start off with you telling us a bit about your journey to becoming a dietitian that specializes in PCOS? How did you get into this work?
Well, I've always been interested in the human body and nutrition and science, and I actually started out in school as a pre-med major. I majored in biology, and after a year or two, I decided to switch to nutrition because when I was in the pre-med track, I had to take a lot of classes like evolutionary biology and botany and things like that. And I really gravitated towards the nutrition curriculum. I also didn't know at the time that I had ADHD, and when you have ADHD, it's very difficult to focus on things that you're not quite as interested in, and it's very easy to hyper-focus on things that you are really interested in. So I'm curious of how my journey would have played out had I known that. But either way, I ended up being a nutrition major, but I still was in the pre-med track, so I didn't actually... Nutrition majors where I went to school, there were different tracks. So there was a dietetics track for people who wanted to be a registered dietitian, and then there was a pre-med track. So I did stick with the pre-med track, but then after I graduated, I was really tired of school, basically, and I didn't know if I had another 4 years in me for medical school plus residency and all that. So all of that to say, when I was a pre-med major and still in that track, I was very interested in reproductive health. So like during the summer, I had an internship with a GYN oncologist, and I really, that was like an area that just really interested me. But I ended up working in nutrition. I was a school nutritionist for 6 years before I did go back and do my dietetic internship so I could become a registered dietitian. I worked in the hospital for a little while before I decided to open my own private practice. And like a lot of dietitians, when I opened my private practice, I accepted insurance. I just kind of saw a little bit of everything. And I noticed I kept seeing clients who had PCOS, and they were being referred for infertility, or they had been diagnosed with diabetes. And everyone was just told that they need to lose weight. And I was like, this feels like it's not really adding up. So I just really tried to learn everything I could at the time about PCOS. After I really decided to specialize in PCOS and really felt like I was an expert at that when it came to nutrition, I decided that I was not going to see any other types of nutrition issues. I was only going to focus on PCOS. And interestingly enough, PCOS runs in my family. I don't actually have PCOS, but like a lot of people, for example, my sister has PCOS. It took her years to get diagnosed, and I knew she had PCOS, but at the time I didn't really know what that meant, and I really did not know that nutrition could play a role in PCOS management. So, of course, now that I specialize in PCOS, I'm very interested in it. Also, because it runs in my family, but that wasn't really what led me to specializing in it.
It kind of sounds like you were meant to be on this path and the stars all kind of aligned and it took you some time to figure it out, but this is the work that you were meant to be doing.
I definitely feel that way too, and especially being in the non-diet area, I really felt like I was supposed to end up there as well.
Yeah, I love that. And we're going to get into asking about that. But first, we've mentioned PCOS quite a bit. Can you share what PCOS is and some common signs for those listening who may not know?
Yeah, PCOS is a metabolic, endocrine, and fertility disorder. So it really affects the entire body, and it's a diagnosis of exclusion, meaning that you kind of have to rule out other things that can cause PCOS symptoms before you reach a PCOS diagnosis. But some of the symptoms are irregular or missing cycles. Hirsutism, which is excessive hair growth like on the face or chest or stomach or back. Androgenic alopecia is another symptom. So that is hair thinning due to elevated androgens. So we see this a lot, along the top of the head, sometimes even there might be some balding or bald spots. Cystic acne, especially along the jawline, can be another symptom as well.
So yeah, there's a lot of different symptoms. And does somebody have all of those symptoms or?
Yeah, some people know it. PCOS really presents differently in each person, and some people might not have any physical symptoms, but they might have an irregular cycle, whereas somebody else might have regular cycles, but they have hirsutism that they want to address. So, yeah, it's a very individualized syndrome and kind of presents differently in each person.
And there's no necessarily test for it. You mentioned it's diagnosis by exclusion. So kind of just figuring out, all right, it's not this, it's not this. Here are these symptoms. Here's what we're left with.
Right. There's not a specific test, but there is diagnostic criteria. So there are three pieces of criteria, and you only need to meet two of the three pieces of criteria. So the first would be irregular or missing periods. The second would be elevated androgens, and then the third would be polycystic ovaries. So, with elevated androgens, those can be diagnosed with labs or symptoms. So, with labs, usually your doctor would start out by ordering free and total testosterone. And then, if those come back normal, they may pull additional labs for other androgens like DHEA sulfate or androstenedione. That's a little bit of a mouthful. But usually they'll start with free and total testosterone because those are the best tests to order. However, testing for androgens can be unreliable. With your free and total testosterone, it's best to get that checked in the morning on the first day of your cycle if you have a cycle. So your doctor can diagnose elevated androgens just based off of signs and symptoms. Hirsutism is the biggest, like, strongest indicator of elevated androgens when we talk about other things like the hair thinning or cystic acne. The hirsutism is the main symptom that they look at there. So if you have, hirsutism, they actually use a score called the Fehrman-Gelway score to give a numerical value to body hair. And if you meet that criteria, your doctor may not even order additional labs there. And then with polycystic ovaries, they look at that through a transvaginal ultrasound, and they're looking at the number of follicles on each ovary as well as ovarian volume. A lot of people get really confused by the name cyst with polycystic ovary syndrome. we're not really talking about the types of cysts that like painfully burst or have to get surgically removed. They're actually looking at the number of follicles on your ovary from where your body's in a state of like trying to ovulate, but it can't. So if you're somebody that has like pain or you keep having cysts that burst or stuff like that, you might want to get screened for other types of conditions that can cause those. But yeah, they're looking at ovarian volume and kind of the number of follicles on the ovary. And something new that recently got changed with the diagnostic criteria is that AMH levels, which is a hormone that's secreted by those follicles, it's a measure of like your basically the number of your eggs. That can be used in place of an ultrasound. So, like if you were to get labs done and you had an elevated AMH, that would kind of check off that piece of criteria and you wouldn't have to have an ultrasound. So, those are the three pieces of criteria. You only have to meet two. But yeah, there are other medical conditions that can cause hirsutism and that can cause a missing period. And so, when you're getting screened, your doctor's probably going to be ruling out those other conditions like thyroid issues or maybe Cushing syndrome, or they might run a prolactin level to see if there's something going on with your pituitary gland. So a lot of times people get frustrated when they feel dismissed trying to get diagnosed, and it may be, well, I don't want to invalidate being dismissed, but it may be also that your doctor's trying to rule out other things as well.
So interesting. That's all really valuable information. Very cool. How does insulin resistance play a role? I didn't hear you mention that in any of the diagnostic criteria.
Yeah, so insulin resistance, inflammation, weight, none of those things are part of the diagnostic criteria. When we say PCOS is a metabolic condition, a lot of that comes from insulin resistance. So most people who have PCOS have insulin resistance, and this really starts as high levels of circulating insulin in the body. And that can lead to cravings, always feeling hungry, feeling exhausted. And this plays a role in PCOS because high levels of insulin can cause the ovaries to produce extra testosterone. So when that happens, that can prevent your body from ovulating. So that is kind of the culprit of an irregular cycle. High levels of testosterone produced by the ovaries, that can be the culprit of hirsutism, cystic acne, hair thinning on your head. So treating insulin resistance is a big piece of the nutrition management for PCOS. Now, not every single person with PCOS has insulin resistance, but a large majority do. And we have seen in research that people who don't have insulin resistance are more predisposed to developing it with PCOS. And so it's kind of becoming more of a blanket recommendation, to follow recommendations for insulin resistance management.
Yeah, that's really interesting that you mentioned that because I think, at least I know when I've done some Googling for myself on, PCOS and what is it, and just kind of looking into it, immediately you're flooded with, okay, insulin resistance and cut this out and don't eat this and be strategic about that. Why did you choose to focus on PCOS from a non-diet perspective?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And you're exactly right. There's so much focus on food restriction when it comes to PCOS recommendations. For me personally, this was more of a natural evolution just from practice. I mean, I was able to sit with so many clients for an hour at a time in nutrition coaching sessions, and I would hear their stories of their diet history. And what I saw in people's lived experiences that we also see in research is that dieting doesn't work, and like focusing on intentional weight loss doesn't work for a large majority of people. And when I was meeting with clients, what I was seeing is actually that this focus on restriction and this focus on weight was actually causing more harm than good. It was leading to binge eating. A lot of my clients had anxiety and depression and body image distress. And a lot of this was directly related to food and the way they felt in their bodies. Also, you know, if I had a client that had type 2 diabetes and they were hyper focused on restricting carbohydrates and losing weight, they were missing the main lab value that we really would want to focus on with diabetes management, and that's blood sugar values or an A1C. And so I find that my clients tend to make better choices coming from a place. And when I say better choices, I just mean choices made from a place of self-care and empowerment rather than guilt and shame. I find that clients just tend to have more sense of peace and balance when they're coming from a non-diet approach. And another thing I should also mention is that in research, and this says this in the formal PCOS guidelines, that when it comes to insulin resistance and inflammation, which are kind of at the core of PCOS, both of those occur independent of weight. Like, no matter what you weigh, this can occur. So, you know, I think that it's a little misguided to make dieting and, you know, weight-centric care kind of the focus of PCOS management. And also, when we talk about all those symptoms that I mentioned, acne, hirsutism, hair loss, irregular cycles, high blood sugar, high triglycerides, high cholesterol, these are all things we see with PCOS. Every single one of those can be improved whether or not you're losing weight. And so all of that just kind of led me to practicing from a non-diet approach.
Yeah, I love that so much. And what you said about dieting being a distraction is so true. People get really tripped up and stuck on, I have to lose weight in order to improve this condition. And there's just so much misinformation out there about that.
Yeah, and I totally understand how somebody could get to a point of feeling that way. I mean, for most people who are diagnosed with PCOS, they're told, like, you need to lose weight to manage your PCOS. But I would just encourage people to lean into your own personal experience. You know, I work with so many clients who tell me, I've tried everything I can to lose weight, and I can't. You know, I'm not going to sit here and act like I have some sort of secret that would help with weight loss. I mean, and if we did have a way to lose weight, then everyone in our countries would be thin.
Yeah.
You know, we wouldn't have this perpetual conversation about weight and weight loss. So yeah, it's a huge distraction.
Yeah, it is. It takes away from addressing the actual issue. So I love that you just tackle the issue head on and say, let's, you know, put a pin in this and just focus on what we can really do in the here and now. That's great.
Yeah, definitely. And I think too, it's hard to go from a place of feeling like I have to lose weight for my health to like, I don't care about weight at all. So if somebody listening is in that place, I think a great first step is just like uncoupling the idea of weight loss with other health outcomes. Like, even if you're having a hard time letting go of that idea, is a first step for you being like, okay, but I am going to view weight and my A1C as like two separate things, or I am going to view weight and my irregular cycles as two separate things. And I can explore whether or not these two things can change, you know, independent of each other.
Because they can.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And it's honestly kind of cool to help people walk through that process, though, because it can be scary if you don't have somebody supporting you in that thought process. Like my clients that have weight neutral doctors tend to just have way better health outcomes. And it's because they have somebody, a medical professional, you know, encouraging them, like, well, you know, just go on a 10-minute walk. Try to go on a 10-minute walk every day, even if you can't do any more time than that. And it's okay if you're not losing weight. Like those benefits are still there. You know, I see my clients just do a lot better when they have weight neutral influences and a support system.
It leads to a lot more sustainable outcomes as opposed to, okay, short term, yeah, maybe you've improved your insulin resistance, you know, you've lost weight, but if you can't maintain it, really, what's the point?
100%. Yeah. And when we say that dieting doesn't work, we're looking at those long-term outcomes and what's sustainable. And, you know, PCOS is a lifelong condition. And, you know, for my clients, I want them to have the best quality of life in the long run.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I want to go back to something that you had mentioned earlier, just with this idea of, you know, cutting out carbohydrates, and you never want any kind of changes nutritionally to come from that place of restriction and shame, but more from that place of empowerment. How do you go about approaching that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I really help my clients, first of all, understand what's going on in their body. Like when we say insulin resistance, what does that mean? And what role does food have on that? And what role do lifestyle factors have on that? So I think, first of all, having a good understanding of that, rather than just being scared of carbs, is step number one. And then also really focusing on adding foods versus coming from a place of restriction. So, you know, when you add protein and fat and fiber to a meal, those are all things that can help blood sugar balance and can help insulin resistance. So instead of the focus being on, you know, you can't have a Coke with that meal, even though that's your favorite drink, or even though that's what you're craving right now, you're not allowed to have that because that's sugar. That's coming from a place of restriction, and that's not giving anybody any tools if they did want to enjoy like a Coke with their meal. Whereas when we teach about blood sugar balance and the concept of adding, and somebody understands what is happening in their body when they have a Coke and they have, I'm giving this as an example, as if somebody has insulin resistance with like type 2 diabetes. When we talk about adding, you know, what are some things that we can make sure you're having when you're drinking that Coke that can help prevent a big spike in your blood sugar and a big spike in your insulin levels? And, you know, I think that when you practice nutrition from a place of, okay, I can actually enjoy whatever I want, and there's always like a tweak or a little trick or a strategy I can use to help with blood sugar balance, it's just a lot more freeing, and you can have a lot more of a peaceful relationship with food.
That word empowering really does encapsulate it perfectly. And coming at it from a place of self-care, like you mentioned before, right? It's so different to make choices that you know are benefiting your body and feel, you know, feel good for you, as opposed to I can't have this, I can't have that. And you narrow down this list of what you are allowed, right? You get to decide for you what feels good and what makes sense and what's going to support your body.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, one thing with insulin resistance is it really can impact the way you feel from day to day. Like I see sometimes people use the words like, feel good, like that food doesn't make me feel good, but they use it in, they really mean it in a diety way. Yeah. Like it's just, instead of being like, that's junk food or that's not healthy, they're saying that instead. When I say feel good and I'm talking about PCOS, I actually mean feel good. Like insulin resistance can cause fatigue, it can cause sleep issues, it can cause craving, like primal feelings of hunger to the point where you eat a meal and you're still hungry and that's all you can think about. But like if you're going through the day and you're just hungry all the time and you feel completely exhausted, that is not feeling good. Yep. And so, you know, when we talk about blood sugar balance and that empowerment, you know, just kind of having a good idea of like, this food is going to give me better energy, or this food is going to make me have less cravings, or, you know, I really improve my fatigue by following this meal pattern, that can feel really empowering. And then, you know, if you want to enjoy something that maybe that's not going to really balance your blood sugar, and you know that, and you know how you're going to feel, like, you can still make the decision to have that. That's not bad. And you're not wrong. It's just, you understand your body better. So you understand when you feel certain ways, kind of like why you feel that way.
Mm-hmm. And because you've made that decision from an empowered place of, okay, I'm going to have this, I know it's maybe not going to make me feel the best, I feel like it creates so much space for, how can I take care of myself then? If I'm choosing to have this, but I know it's maybe going to make me feel a little tired, a little sluggish, like, you know, what do I need to do to just help myself through that instead of guilting and shaming myself for it?
Yeah, totally. And the reality is that we don't always have 100% control over the food that we're eating anyway. I mean, unexpected things pop up in our schedule. We might have an emergency. Maybe we lose track of time. Like, so many things can come up, and being more flexible with food really allows you to participate in life a little bit and not get stressed out over the aspect of controlling food.
And so what you were sharing about some of those side effects of insulin resistance with, you know, the fatigue and the intense cravings, that primal hunger, is that really where you see binge eating kind of cross over with PCOS?
So yeah, that can definitely play a role. We do see that people with PCOS are 6 times more likely to develop an eating disorder, and a lot of that is binge eating. I think the statistic is about 30% of people with PCOS will experience binge eating disorder. And we don't, I have my theories. From a research standpoint, we can't say like there's this increased risk because of this one reason, and we've seen that in research. But, you know, we know with binge eating that restricting food is kind of at the foundation of binge eating, and also using food as like a coping tool, like from that emotional aspect. And I think that with PCOS, there's so much pressure to lose weight. There's a lot of fear mongering around health issues. Like, if you don't lose weight, you're never going to be able to get pregnant, and you're going to get type 2 diabetes, which is like really number one, not the best way to provide education, but also that's not even really true. But, you know, I think it's kind of like the perfect storm for binge eating. People are trying to lose weight, they're not eating enough, they're being overly restrictive of carbohydrates. Like, all of these things are things that can lead to binge eating. And then on top of that, you have insulin resistance. So you're hungry all the time. So, you know, if you've skipped breakfast, you're eating low carb, you're starving throughout the day, of course you're going to come home and maybe have a binge at some point in the evening, because that's your body's way of protecting itself and just trying to get you what you need.
Yeah, and that's really what I've seen in my clients who have sort of struggled with PCOS and binge eating, is that restriction mentality of, I need to cut out this, that, and the other thing. But that makes the binge eating worse, which therefore makes it so much harder to manage the PCOS. We really need to manage the binge eating first in a lot of ways, and be able to come from that more neutral, balanced place and be able to tackle the PCOS.
Yeah, definitely. And I think too, a lot of people view healing binge eating and managing PCOS as like two separate things, but it really goes all together, because first of all, when you think about PCOS management, it's not just about physically managing symptoms. It's not just about labs. It's also about your mental health, your emotional health, and just your overall well-being. And it can feel so stressful to experience binge eating disorder, and that alone can impact your physical health. And so, you deserve to have a peaceful relationship with food and your body and your medical conditions too. And so I would totally view addressing binge eating as part of managing PCOS.
Yeah, I love that. And it's so true because that's what's going to lead to, again, that sustainability.
Yeah, definitely. But I totally agree with you. And I see it so much in practice. A lot of my clients binge eat or have binge eating disorder, and it's very circular. It's
Yeah.
really wanting to control health and PCOS symptoms and being restrictive, and then binge eating, and then kind of panicking over the binge at, what impact is that having on my PCOS? And then it starts the cycle all over again.
Yeah. And it's in a lot of ways, I feel coming from a place of wanting to take care of oneself and wanting to do good and wanting to honor your body. But it just gets so wrapped up in this kind of all or nothing mentality that diet culture teaches us. And it turns into something that's so far from self-care in the end.
Yeah, definitely. I 100% agree. And I think what's really upsetting to me is that, when I'm working with a client, they know that they're so detached from self-care. Like they know what is happening is not really working for them. But it's like all the influences and the pressure around them is oftentimes what's keeping them in that cycle.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you 100%.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to ask about inflammation. I heard you mention that before, and that's something that's such a hot topic right now in the wellness space. I mean, scrolling through TikTok, there are so many people talking about inflammation and reducing inflammation. What actually is inflammation?
Yeah, it's definitely a hot, trendy diet culture topic, and that's not what we're
Really?
talking about when we're talking about PCOS. PCOS is an inflammatory condition. We see in research that on average, somebody with PCOS is much more likely to have chronic low-grade inflammation compared to somebody without PCOS. So, inflammation is our body's way of protecting itself from injury or from something harmful in the body. And this can happen on an acute level. So, like, let's say if you fall and sprain your ankle and your ankle swells, you have inflammation that you can visibly see, and that's part of your recovery process. There are a lot of things in life and in our day-to-day existence that are inflammatory. So, like, having inflammation is a normal part of life. But it's when something happens inside your body, kind of more at a cellular level that your body can't recover from. That's chronic inflammation. And that's really what's tied to a lot of health conditions like cardiovascular disease and diabetes. And that's what we see with PCOS. So, there are inflammatory markers that you can get checked, like labs, like your high sensitivity C-reactive protein. But it's not really part of the formal PCOS recommendations to track or monitor this, just because it doesn't really impact much with, the recommendations you would follow. Like the recommendations are still the same.
So interesting. So it kind of gets looped in with everything else, but it's not necessarily what you really, really want to focus on. It's sort of something that might come and happen a little more naturally as a result of focusing on some of the other more hallmark pieces of PCOS.
Yeah, and insulin resistance is inflammatory. So when you're addressing insulin resistance, theoretically, you're kind of also addressing inflammation. And also inflammation can make insulin resistance worse too. So they kind of feed off of each other. And some of the PCOS recommendations, like we talked about pairing carbs with protein and fat and fiber. Another recommendation is to consume omega-3 fatty acids. A big piece of that is because those are anti-inflammatory, so that can help decrease inflammation. So there's kind of like a bucket of recommendations of things that can help address insulin resistance and inflammation, but I don't really like to nitpick the topic of inflammation with my clients, just because we need to be focused on like the big picture, but inflammation is definitely a part of it.
Yeah. No, I like that though, because it is really trendy right now, and so it I think can feel really important. Like I have to focus on this and this is the most important thing. But really it's just being made really popular by wellness culture, diet culture, whatever you want to call it. And there are more important things to focus your energy on.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the same thing could be said, not talking about anti-inflammatory, but things that are pro-inflammatory. Like if you Google online, you'll read like avoid sugar at all costs with PCOS. That's pro-inflammatory. And like, you know what else is pro-inflammatory? Getting poor sleep, working at a stressful job, like stressing about food. We see that weight cycling, like yo-yo dieting over time, actually makes inflammation worse. So we need to be really careful about what we're cherry picking to focus on, because again, sometimes it can be a really big distraction.
Yeah, and when we make food the problem, we stick ourselves further into that restrictive mindset, which is going to lead to other negative behaviors.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, I'm sure you talk about this a lot on your podcast, but we don't see dieters have better health outcomes long term. We actually see the opposite. You know, yo-yo dieting can lead to worse cardiovascular disease outcomes. It can make insulin resistance worse. It can make inflammation worse. And so, you know, focusing on your overall big picture and like what's going to help me improve my life long term and help me focus on self-care long term is really where you want your mind to be.
Absolutely. That's great advice. And as we kind of wrap things up, is there any other advice you'd want to give for somebody who's listening with PCOS?
I really like to share with people that PCOS is not your fault. We see in research that PCOS occurs for likely genetic reasons and maybe environmental factors like environmental endocrine disruptors that can really kind of mess with our hormones. And so, if you're somebody that's feeling a lot of shame and blame, like my diet caused my PCOS or my weight caused my PCOS, I just want to let you know that that's not really the case. And also that you can manage PCOS and have a peaceful relationship with food in your body. You don't have to pick one or the other.
That's wonderful advice, and I 1000% agree with you on that. It doesn't need to be either or. It can be both at the same time. And it sounds like you're certainly the person to go to if somebody is struggling with PCOS and wants an expert who really knows what they're talking about and can get you the support that you need. So I'm really glad that we had you on the show, and it was really lovely talking to you.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
You're very welcome. And I guess I'll see you on Instagram land and, hopefully we can connect again in the future. But it was really nice meeting you and really nice chatting with you.
It was so nice to chat.
Thanks to everybody listening, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks for the next episode.